Children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul the key. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul the key.
Hello, and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician, which basically means I'm a figment of your imagination. We are all figments of each other's imagination. And tonight, you get me again, just talking about all kinds of things that you might be interested. I hope you're interested. And before we get into some kind of serious stuff tonight, I would like to mention that the show is brought to you by starlights.com. That's star with two R's, starlights, and alternativecancer.us. So check out those websites. There's some cool products and lots of information on how to deal with various forms of cancers and basically cleaning up your life, you know, things like that. They do consults as well. Cancer consults, you know, to see what in your life needs to be changed that could help you. So before we go into the rest of this, let me just caution you. I don't want this to be doom and gloom, okay? There's enough doom and gloom out there. But what I want to talk about tonight is preparing for whatever the heck is coming. Now, a lot of people are feeling something is coming, and they're not sure if it's going to be the end of civilization as we know it, the end of money as we know it, a leap into higher consciousness, an ascension. I mean, you know, there's hundreds of things converging on December 21st of 2012. And now people are saying, oh, 2013 is going to be even worse, 2013 to 2015, you know, and there's going to be all this stuff that happens on the planet. And then other people are saying, oh, no, it really, you know, it comes to a head in 2018 to 2020. And don't you just get a little tired of all that? You know, I mean, there's only so much we can do anyway, right? The main thing we can do is change our stinking thinking and start using our consciousness the way that it was intended by the Creator to be used, which is to stop worrying about all this dastardly stuff. Yes, prepare. But don't dwell on the bad stuff, because that'll just bring it to you. And as I've mentioned before, my own feeling about what's going to happen is it's going to be a sifting out according to your vibratory level. And I was reminded of a conversation I had with Jim Elvidge, who wrote the book The Universe Solved. Very, very interesting. And I got to get him on the program again, because he was talking about how we could actually be in a video game. And, you know, at some point the game ends. And, you know, sometimes you get killed on the lower levels. And, you know, you keep coming back and get more experience. And, you know, you get into the upper levels. And hopefully, eventually, you know, you win the game, right? So that could be either in this lifetime or it could take many lifetimes. Now, this is something I've been talking about for a long time. But the interesting thing is to find that more and more quantum physicists are now saying that that's actually what's going on. And if you compare that to the spiritual teachings for millennia, they've been saying, yeah, you know, life can get hard, you can die here, you can get hurt, maimed, yada, yada, yada. But it doesn't really matter, because that's not the real you. The real you is someplace else. Well, if you look at that from the 20th and 21st century viewpoint, then we here could be avatars, right? And the real us is playing the game. But, you know, as a prize at the end of this game, you get to be an individuated consciousness and go play the game, you know, and make your own avatars up and things like that. So it's very fascinating stuff. And I, for one, am really looking forward to seeing exactly what does happen. Now, there are plenty of people out there who have said that there will not be a nuclear shootout. And they say that there will be wars, but, you know, nuclear war is really bad business because then it's all over. And really, the whole reason for wars is, you know, to bring money into the pockets of the elite. And, you know, it's all about control. So, you know, then there's the whole fascist way that the United States seems to be going, thanks to the people who are bending over and, you know, in the hopes that they're going to be saved while everybody else is sacrificed. So, I mean, you know, there's so many dire things out there. But enough of that, okay? I told you I really didn't want to go into doom and gloom. What I would like to do tonight is offer you some hints about how to deal with surviving. And I can tell you that with all my years in the hospital and, you know, as a first responder, through being an RN, through stopping at traffic accidents and everything else, you kind of develop this sixth sense as to whether somebody's going to go into shock or not. And shock is something most people are not prepared for, and they don't have a concept of what that means. You know, you can watch television, you can see the emergency shows, and somebody just looks dazed, you know, and somebody says, oh, they're in shock, and they lead them off to the hospital. Well, let me tell you what, if there's going to be a big disaster of any kind, you could go into shock, and nobody's going to know what to do, okay? So we want to talk about that a little. There's several types of shock. You know, there's hemorrhagic shock, where you're cut or shot or whatever, you're bleeding to death. And, you know, obviously that's life-threatening. There's neurologic shock where, you know, your brain is overwhelmed, your nervous system is overwhelmed, and you just can't function. There's psychologic shock where you're pushed over the edge by the horror of something that you've seen. And there's a psychic shock as well, which is very difficult to explain to people. But probably the closest I can come to explaining it is say that you are a person who doesn't believe in monsters under the bed, doesn't believe that there's a boogeyman out there, doesn't believe in angels or devils, doesn't believe in any of that stuff. To you, it's all a bunch of hoo-ha. And then something happens, and all of a sudden, all those things that you were absolutely assured didn't exist are around your bed. What are you going to do? And they're real, and they're reaching out and touching you. So that's a psychic shock that then becomes psychological shock. Okay, so there's all kinds of types of shock you can go into. And, you know, if you think back to the 1920s when the elite engineered the stock market crash so that they could make a huge profit, there were a lot of people that went to the tallest buildings around and jumped off and killed themselves because they lost everything in an instant. Now, that's a form of shock. Okay, that's economic shock. And it's something that could happen to a whole lot of people very quickly here. So we're going to cover the physical types of things that you need to do to prepare, as well as metaphysical things or spiritual things, depending on which side of the fence you're on. But basically, if you remember this one thing, that we are spiritual beings having a human existence, it will help you to get through this stuff a lot easier, okay? And what was that old saying? You know, don't panic. If this was a real life, you would have heard the emergency instructions. You know, it's not a real life. So don't worry about it. But, you know, prepare for what you have, okay? So the first thing I want to address is the economic shock, which is likely to hit us fairly quickly because they are now printing money that has absolutely no value and have been for a while. And the rest of the world is getting very upset about this because we have no gold or silver to back it up. And, you know, they're just printing paper and they're pretending like it's real. So we're playing on monopoly money. So, yeah, all you people that are out there working really hard, you're getting monopoly money. And they're expecting you to pay it back in some kind of very valuable fashion. So that doesn't always work. And there's not a heck of a lot you can do about that. You know, you're caught in the system, they planned it that way, and that's the way it goes. So here's what you do to prepare for further downturns in the economy. And I'm talking to the people that don't have any money to invest. You know, maybe you have $5 spare each week, and that's it, if you're lucky. Or maybe you'd have to scrimp and save to have $5 spare. And there's an awful lot of people that are in that situation right now. They're barely hanging on. And some people aren't. Some people are on the street. Or they've had to move in with relatives. They've had to sell everything that they owned, and there's nothing left. So what do you do if you have no money to invest in gold or silver? You go to bed at night terrified about what's going to happen to you and your family without any reserves. Now, granted, the people who are selling gold and silver are capitalizing on this. It's a feeding frenzy. That's why the prices have gone up so much. There's really not a lack of gold or silver. We've got plenty of precious metals all over this planet. Diamonds galore. We've got all kinds of stuff that we have assigned value to. But really, does it have any value? I mean, seriously? Hunks of shiny metal? What are we, magpies? So you got your hunks of shiny metal and your shiny little glassy type stuff. You know, unless you're doing an industry that that requires some of those things, like photographs used to, or x-rays require silver, you know, things like that. Or if you're making colloidal silver, you know, for your health, yeah, you might need some silver. So what do you do when you can't get any of that? And here's the other thing, too. You know, our government and many other governments have made it illegal to own any precious metals at certain times. And they have gone house to house and they have confiscated all the gold and silver, including your jewelry, anything that was of any value. And they can do that to your food and your water, too. And if you doubt me, go look at the executive orders that President Obama and the Obama nation has put together. They can come and take everything, including you. They can come and take you and put you in a FEMA camp. And so there's all these things that are going on. So what are you going to do? So here's what I suggest. Step back a minute. Contemplate exactly what you're preparing for. And start looking at circumstances that make more sense. Okay, it's not about making money if everything collapses. It's about survival. Pure and simple. Survival. You're looking at food and water, shelter and safety. It'd be nice to have some coin, but hey, if you don't have the basic needs, you're screwed. Okay? People go crazy when things start getting difficult. And I can tell you the last couple of weeks have shown me a lot of that. I mean, I've been watching people get crazier and crazier over the last 20 years anyway, so I could feel this stuff coming. But lately, I've seen more people flip out, and it's getting a little bit more up close and personal. And you kind of go, whoa, what is going on with people? Now, spiritually, you know, that's a whole other thing. There's the separation. The negative's going to one side, the positive's going to another. And I prefer to be on the positive side. So the minute somebody starts getting negative with me, I either say something to them to get them out of my space. And hey, if they're being nasty, you can be nasty back to them. Or I just turn around and leave. Because there's no talking with someone who's going crazy. Okay? And I can tell you that a lot of what's going on has something to do with demonic influence. And, you know, if you think that those don't exist too, boy, are you in for a surprise. I hope you can stay in your calm little world and everything works out for you. But in the meantime, there's a lot of strange stuff out there, okay? So now, the people in the know in the government already have their plans, okay? They've got their little bunkers underground. Well, actually, big, luxurious bunkers. They're going to go after everything they can get. They don't care about us. You know, we're the little people. And so we have to take care of ourselves. And think about your neighbors. Do you like your neighbors? I mean, if you've got a neighbor who's a Hell's Angel or something, and they don't happen to like you, guess whose house they're coming to get what they need? So, I mean, you have to consider these things. And there are a lot of people who are really not prepared to deal with what's coming. If you've never gone camping, if you've never, you know, had to go a week without services, especially electricity, you may go into shock just having those things removed. Think about yourself and other people who would be displaced and what would they need. And, you know, we have disasters that happen in this country and all around the world every season. You know, look at Oklahoma and Texas, you know, Tornado Alley. The whole towns are wiped out in an afternoon. And look at all the floods back east. And then in the wintertime, they have so much ice, it destroys all of the electrical lines. And so people are without electricity for a week or so. And in the summertime, the electrical grid gets overloaded, and, you know, people are without cooling. You know, what are you going to do? So think about that. Sometimes even an extra pair of socks is something that a barefoot person would be willing to trade for. A pair of hiking boots would be even better. How about a flint, rain gear, or a cable saw? Or how about a breathable fabric hat for those of us that are out in the desert here? How about petroleum jelly, bandages, antibiotic ointment? These are all things that you kind of have to think about what you would do if you really needed something. What about meals ready to eat or any other kind of dehydrated food? That stuff can be more valuable than gold. But remember, of course, you know, if the military comes through, they'll take your food too. So in light of all these horrible scenarios, think back about when the Israelites were wandering in the desert for 40 years. And they talk about manna and how it fell from the sky. There's evidence that was actually chlorella algae. Now, algae is pretty abundant. We wouldn't want to run around and eat that. But you know what? Chlorella feels pretty good in the body. It clears things out. And you can definitely survive on that. Of course, if you tried to give it to the military, unless they're the survivalists, they wouldn't be very interested in that either. Think about other things, too. Look for a good tent, sleeping bags, knives, backpacks, clothing that takes moisture away. It's called wicking, something that keeps you warm and dry. And the natural fibers do that, and some of the newer fibers. Now, I remember at the start of this, I said, what are you going to do with little or no money? That's where the goodwill comes in. You would be amazed at the amount of backpacks and such that are in the goodwill around here. Now, I wasn't real impressed when I went to a larger city. You know, you have to be in a certain area to get anything that's decent. But depending upon the area that you're in, you could find a lot of that. So if you go to a Goodwill someplace where there's a lot of hiking nearby, or like one of the, go to a resort area, go to any of the national parks areas, you're likely to find all kinds of stuff that people bought, used for a week or two, and then gave to the Goodwill. Or go to the SPCA thrift shop. You can pick up stuff really cheap. And you can look at freecycle.org, listia.com, freemesa.org. There's all kinds of things like that online where people give stuff away. And you just put up their wanted. And people that have stuff to give away will put up their offer. You know, and you make your arrangements and you go pick the stuff up. So you can do this with little or no money. Just figure out what you need. You know, you're the one that has to figure that out. Then you want to make up what we call a go pack or a bug out bag. You want to have it someplace close to the door so you can grab it and run. Now, if you have these emergency preparations ready, that can take a lot of stress out of your life. Just knowing that food, water, clothing, and shelter items are ready in case of sudden evacuation, for whatever reason, can clear your mind so you can deal with everything on a day-to-day basis, no matter what's going on. And, you know, it's good to have stuff in your car, especially if you're in a snow area or a desert area. You want to have stuff that helps you to survive in case you get stuck. But if you're home, don't count on being able to take your car either. So make sure you have a good pair of hiking boots, maybe two, and duct tape. Do you know how amazing duct tape is? And if you're in an area where you don't get the cable of red-green, if you have never seen that, you have got to look that up. It is hysterical. They do everything with duct tape. They tape cars together and everything else. It's pretty funny. But seriously, duct tape is really a good thing to have on hand because it will oftentimes stick when nothing else will. And when I was doing a pistol training course, we had a couple guys from England who had to rent some pistols. And one guy was renting a Glock, which is plastic, and kept breaking down. And so I brought him a piece of duct tape, which is known as the Glock Emergency Repair Kit. So we had a good laugh over that one. But Seriously, duct tape is a good thing to have because you never know what you're going to need. You might want to bring some electrical tape too, just in case. But the main thing is you need water, food, clothing, and shelter items, okay, and something to walk in. Now, I can tell you that my late husband, being, you know, the survivalist and having survived things that most of us don't even want to have to contemplate, he had a bug-out vest, or what he called a go vest. I'll tell you what, he was trying to put stuff on a go vest for me, and I about fell over backwards. So how much can you carry? I mean, you can't take the kitchen sink in there, you know? You got to be realistic about this, but you got to have the things that you really need, and the stuff that's just comfort items, if you can carry them, that's fine. But if not, how are you going to get it to go with you? And, you know, I mean, if you're thinking, you know, pictures of the kids and things like that, okay, make wallet-sized pictures of the kids. Make copies of everything that you've got and put them in a plastic bag or, you know, some way that you can take them. Don't be standing there in the middle of the living room trying to take your important pictures out of the frames or out of the photo books when everything around you is burning down. There's a lot of that that goes on. You know, if there's a huge wildfire in an area, and many people have lost their lives in the California wildfires over the last few years, they're horrifying, and they come up quick. You don't have time to stand there and take everything that you think is valuable. So get it together now, okay? It'll help you sleep at night. Trust me, it really, really does work. So people are too stressed out. They don't even know what they're stressed out about half the time now. But I can tell you that if there's a wildfire coming upon you, it is a weird feeling. And the smoke's all around you, and you can hear the crackling of the fire, and there's a weird glow to the sky. And you're standing there not knowing if you're going to make it out of wherever you're at. So you don't want to be thinking about what you should have gotten together. Okay? Get that all together in a bag that you can carry so that you can actually make it out of there. Okay? So that's the basic preparing for economic collapse without gold. And, you know, think about what's valuable. So you're looking for dehydrated foods. And if you haven't started doing that and you can spare a little bit of money every month, if you go to the website, theenlightenedmedicineshow.com, and search around there, there's a link that you can click on that will take you to my page on GoFoods Global. I think it's my GoFoods. No, it's enlightenedmedicine.gofoodsglobal.com. But anyway, you can get that off of my website, The Enlightened Medicine Show. It's natural, not organic, but it is non-GMO. And they have, you know, quite a variety of different dehydrated and freeze-dried foods that you can get on a monthly basis. And you can pick out what you want. You don't have to get one of the kits. You can do a customized thing. So if you got $20 a month, well, get yourself something, you know, get an entree every month or something. And then when you get these things, that's the other thing. You need to have some place to put things. If you have bugs or little critters in your area, then you need to prepare for that. So whenever you get any kind of food that you want to keep for storage, you're going to have it either nitrogen sealed, have oxygen absorbers in it or around it. Things have to be in plastic, even though they're already usually in plastic Mylar-coated bags, or else they're in, you know, big bins that they use carbon dioxide or nitrogen to pull the air out of it. And that stuff will last 25, 30 years, depending upon what it is that you're trying to save. But you want to make sure that the critters can't get into it. And so if all you can do is buy a bag of rice every week when you go to the grocery store, that's fine, but make sure you protect it or you're going to have bugs in it. And especially flowers. All flowers have weevils in them. And if you leave your stuff there or leave seeds, like if you get wheat seed just in a plastic bag and you leave it there for a couple of months, next time you open that cupboard, you will be amazed at the life that you have allowed to be created. Yeah, it stinks too. Yes, I've been there, done that. So you need to protect all this stuff. You want an airtight tin. And I prefer to use something like a stainless steel or an aluminum container that's airtight, or put bags inside of it. You know, you got to make sure you protect the stuff, or it's not going to be any good to you. But you want all those kinds of things in your bag. You want at least 3 days. And if it's really a serious disaster, if you're talking that the world as you know it has just changed drastically and is likely never to be the same again, then you got to do something a little bit different. So at that point, you're going to have more, at least a month. And you're going to have things that you can reach, you know, someplace you can get to where you've got a store of things. If you're in the city, that's going to be a problem. Now, I'm not saying these things are going to definitely happen, people. I'm just saying start preparing yourself just in case. And I can tell you, having grown up in Northern California, we were without power for 3 days to a week at a time many times because we used to have bad storms. And it always amazed me at how unprepared most people were. You know, and my dad had built a fireplace in our house, and, you know, we had it ready to cook on. You could put a grill in it. You could put it had a little thing, you know, for a pot that you could hang. But we would just cook in the fireplace. We had candles, you know. We gathered around the fireplace at night. We had goose down quilts and things and blankets and wool blankets. And that's another thing. Natural fibers are very important. Goose down is a problem when you're traveling because if it gets wet, it's not going to keep you warm. Wool will keep you warm whether you're wet or not. Okay? So that's why the Army was using wool blankets so much. And then they discovered that actually wool works pretty good. It's heavy, but this is something you might want to consider. So I'm going to get into the clothing when I go into building a basic emergency kit. So I got three parts to this for building the basic emergency kit. The first one is clothing. And that's a pretty obvious one, you would think. But I can tell you that I have seen plenty of women, especially, who think that they have to have 5 pairs of shoes, and they have to have, you know, a couple skirts and a couple blouses and a couple sweaters and, you know, on and on and on. And you look at what they consider to be a light packing and you go, are you insane? We're talking disaster, people. You need to put things in there that you don't wear all the time that are just in that go pack so you're ready to go. You need to have a lightweight wool sweater. If you have any itching issues with wool, then you're going to need to have a lightweight turtleneck or something to go underneath it. But you want something that's between you and the exterior. And sometimes a wool sweater and a turtleneck is all that you need. Sometimes you need a goose down jacket or a down alternative. And the down alternative is better in a way because even though it doesn't squish up as well, at least when it gets wet, it's still going to insulate you. So you want to get prepared with that. And the thinnest wool is usually merino wool, but you can get any kind of wool and it'll help you. You want something lightweight, something you can squish down. And so I find that it's easier to pack clothing if you get one of those vacuum bags and get one of the travel bags that you can roll up, you know, and push the air out yourself, because none of the vacuum bags ever hold very well. So then this way you can at least get the stuff packed into your backpack and then repack it without looking for a vacuum. Okay, so think about underwear. You need at least 2 pairs of your underwear. 3 or 4 might be better, especially if you're really scared. You want to be able to have a clean pair at least when you get up in the morning and another clean pair when you go to bed at night. And so you got to always be washing one. Okay, now this is vitally important. People laugh with that and they think, oh, you know, I'm not going to worry about that. Well, you better worry about that because you're also not going to have medical care if there's a major disaster. So you need to keep yourself as clean as possible. Rather than carrying washcloths, I suggest you get some bandanas. They make great washcloths. They can also shade your head and you can tie them at the end of a stick to wave surrender or whatever or signal where you're at. They can flap in the breeze. They're very easy to wash, and they dry quickly. And you can pack a week's worth of them in a very small little pouch. So that's a good thing to have for washing. You've got to stay clean. Because if you start getting some bad infections, especially women, if you get infections from not wearing clean underwear, then there's not likely to be anybody that's going to be able to help you. So you need to think about these nasty things beforehand. Okay? All right. So you're going to have at least one turtleneck, long sleeved, at least one wool sweater, thin wool will do. You want at least two pairs of pants, sturdy pants like jeans or something, so that you can travel however long you need to and those pants will last. Forget any kind of fancy clothing, okay? This is not a fashion statement. This is survival. You want to stay warm and dry, so you need some kind of a rain slicker. Umbrellas are usually not going to fit unless you have a really tiny one. But remember, you have to carry all this stuff. So get your stuff together and then look at it and go, let's see, that umbrella weighs about a half a pound. And this thing over here weighs 2 pounds, and this one weighs a quarter of a pound. What can I carry? And then put it all in the pack, make sure it fits, then put the pack on your back and see, can you carry it? You might want to practice a little bit too. Practice walking around with it and see. You need good shoes, usually two pair. You need at least two pair of socks. I would say go with at least four. And out of those socks, you want at least one pair that's wool. Now, this is vitally important because you can take the wool socks and a thin pair of cotton socks, and you can do what's called the wet socks treatment. And that will heat up your entire body. The socks will be toasty dry, usually within about an hour of having put them on. And those are what you use to help you to heal as well. And it works really great for a lot of things. You can do a wet t-shirt treatment if you need to with the wool sweater. And, you know, if you've got a respiratory infection, it'll usually drive it out very quickly. If you have a headache, you can do the wet socks and get something cold on the top of your head. So there's all kinds of things that you can do with these things that you might not have thought about. The other thing that you're going to need is gloves. Now, you might need two pairs. You might need one pair that's like an outside working set of gloves and another pair that's just for warmth. So you can get a thin wool pair or a thick wool pair, but you need usually leather for outdoor working type stuff. So remember, you got to keep yourself clean and you've got to keep yourself free of cuts and bruises and things like that. So that's the basic stuff. Let me just check my thing here. Also, you can use socks for mittens on your hands. But make sure you get some wool. Make sure you have cotton. You want to stick to natural fibers except for your outerwear. If you can, get some silk thermals. They don't take up a lot of room, and they can save your life on a cold night. You want a couple t-shirts, a flannel shirt, the wool sweater, as I mentioned. Jackets, down substitutes, same thing for your sleeping bag. Synthetic fibers don't lose that insulating factor. Oh, hats. You need two hats. One knit hat and one with a big brim or a sun shield. So they can shield the head from the sun. They also keep the body warm. You can actually get sunstroke if your head is uncovered and you're not used to being out in the sun, even on a fairly cool day, and it will scramble your brains. So make sure you have a hat. And then the knit cap you need because at night you don't want to lose the heat, your body heat, through your head. So even if you're covered up in the sleeping bag, if your head's sticking out and the top of your head doesn't have a hat on it, you're going to lose a lot of body heat that way. So it's very important to make sure that you prepare for that. You want a good rain poncho with a hood that can double as a mini tent when you need it. You might want a wool scarf or a muffler. And you want clothes that are going to fade into the background. You can use bright colors for other things, like you can get a couple bright colored bandanas so people can find you if you need them to. But if there's a major disaster, you want to be able to hide. So you want to fade into the background. So browns, grays, not black. Well, except for maybe some nighttime stuff. But browns, grays, greens, things like that. Okay, so that covers the clothing part. Part two of your basic emergency kit is first aid supplies. Now, if you're on medication, you better make sure that that kit has an extra bottle of that medication in there, at least one. It can be expensive, and you're going to have to rotate it. But if there's no longer any way to get medication and you're going to die without that medication, then you better make sure you've got some. So make sure every time you refill the prescription, you rotate the bottles out so it's still effective. You also want a few bottles of whatever general antibiotics and painkillers that work best for you. And if you don't want to do pharmaceutical drugs, herbals or homeopathics can be substituted. And you can use the zero-point field emitters. They look like a solid stainless steel pen, and they're infused. So that's a frequency thing. Learn how to use it before you pack it away. You can take pain out with those devices. You want a small tablet or a small bottle of iodine tablets. They taste terrible, okay, but they will purify the water and protect the thyroid from radiation. They also serve as a wound wash. The other good thing to have in your emergency kit is a bottle of castor oil, also known as Palma Christi. And that's used for wound and burn treatment. You can take it internally. We use it for women who are having a difficult birth. And, of course, they never want to take whatever you put it in with again after that. But it works, and it helps the birth be easier. You can use it as an eye drop, so you want to include a small dropper bottle for this purpose. And it works really great for scratched corneas and acid in the eyes and things like that. You want to keep the oil sealed in a sturdy plastic baggie, probably in a couple, because if any of this stuff gets on your clothing, you'll never get it out. Castor oil turns rancid, and then it's really a weird smell. So you really don't want that to spill. So you might put that in baggies, pad it, you know, put it inside a tin or something. And then you want to use a piece of undyed wool or cotton as a poultice to use with the oil. And this castor oil is something every emergency kit should have in it. Because if you've fallen and you've scraped yourself up and you've got, you know, gravel and dirt and feces and all kinds of things in the wound because you've fallen down the mountain and there's no water around, then you can die very quickly of sepsis. Whereas if you have some castor oil with you, you can pour the castor oil over all that, wrap it up, and that will usually save you from the dire consequences that could happen. And then you go around looking for some water so that you can wash yourself off. But castor oil should be in everybody's hiking kit. And everybody laughs at me when I go hiking because I take all this stuff. I take Ace Wrap. I take 4x4s and Curlex and all this kind of stuff that most people leave at home. They're all laughing at me. I have a goose down jacket usually or a synthetic jacket in the backpack, extra socks. And I could be hiking and it's 118 degrees out there and people are just laughing at me. They're walking along with their flops and their hiking boots and, you know, shorts and a tank top, and I've got, you know, a full outfit in my backpack. And I can't tell you how many times I've had to use that stuff on people. I mean, usually it's kind of voodoo. You know, if I take it, I don't need it. And I've never needed it for myself, but I certainly have needed it for other people. So good stuff to have. You also want to have a bottle of instant bandage and some super glue. Put all that stuff in baggies. Instant bandage is a liquid. It's kind of like a super glue. It's inert. And so you use it to close wounds, you know, rather than having to have butterfly bandages or sew somebody up. You want to include needles and thread just in case, mostly for clothing repair. But if you got a bad cut, you may need to sew it up. It's not elegant. Just sterilize everything first. You might want a good book on, you know, first aid, emergency first aid. It's a good thing to have in your backpack, especially if you have no clue about any of this stuff I'm talking about. And you want a roll or two of gauze. You want some gauze pads, also known as 4x4s, and a couple of ACE bandages. And then you want something that can secure all that stuff. I can tell you the easiest thing is safety pins or duct tape. So there goes the duct tape again. Hey, if you have enough duct tape, you could really make some money on that. You know, I'm sure somebody would give you a couple cans of beans or something for a roll of duct tape. So there you go. Learn to trade. You also want some plastic wrap, and that keeps your wounds from contaminating clothing. It's also part of the castor oil pack. You want an eye wash cup, a small squirt bottle, and an unopened sterile bottle to use as an eyewash station. You want to pack some balloons in there too. Long balloons can be used as splints. And you can duct tape them to the leg if somebody has a broken leg. Nylon string is helpful to string up a mini tent, to get stuck rings off swollen fingers, and to hold clothing together. Large garbage bags are a good idea, again, as a mini tent, a rain poncho, wound cover, windbreaker jacket, window and door sealant with duct tape, water distiller, carrying sack, and, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff. You can use a black garbage bag to distill water from the air. And if you don't know how to do that, you might want to look that up online. It's important stuff to know how to do. So the idea with your first aid kit is to be prepared for a worse emergency than modern life would normally present. You know, we don't expect to have to go through a volcanic eruption, nuclear blast, 7.0 or larger earthquake. However, these things are happening more and more. And there may not be people that can come and get you and save you. So what you want to do is be prepared yourself, and if not for yourself, for someone else. Okay? So that's the first aid part. Then we go to survival tools. Some of the tools to keep in your bug out pack have been mentioned in the other two things, the clothing and the first aid supplies. Then there's the other good tools, common sense stuff, a couple of good LED flashlights with extra batteries, and a solar battery charger. You need those for lighting the way, signaling, etc. You can pick up some color filters from the Dinshaw Society to do Dinshaw treatments, which is color therapy. You know, you don't have to use a flashlight for that. You can just use the sunlight. And you want, if you can get it, again, we're looking at weight in your pack, but you want something that is going to give you electric light, even if you can't recharge it. So that would be a magnet flashlight or a crank flashlight. So think about this stuff now so you don't have to think about it later, okay? Because you may need to use it for signaling. You may need to use it to make sure you don't fall down a deep, dark hole. You know, kind of good things to have. You want a magnifying glass. You can use it for several things, fire starter, reading, examining. You want some waterproof matches, flints, and a magnesium block. And fine steel wool, which serves as a fine tinder when you can't find any dry grass or paper. And it'll go up really quick. Candles are great for when the flashlight batteries run out for light, warmth, and cooking. And you can save the wax runoff to help to start another fire with tinder. I used to make these little things called fire starters that I gave to people for Christmas. I just took old Christmas paper, threw in some shaved candle wax from, you know, the bottom end of the candle that you were going to throw out, put a little incense in there and some crushed pine cones, and you just wrap that up and you take one of those and you throw it in the fireplace and light that up and starts a nice fire. So you can kind of see that these little things that you would normally throw away in your modern life, you could use them if you're in survival mode. Okay, the other thing you want to do is go to an outdoor camping or sporting goods store. Get yourself a ring saw. Now, a ring saw is a length of cable that's sharp, and it's got a ring at each end so you can hold it. That's the most compact way you can carry a saw with you, and believe me, you are going to need it if you're in survival mode. So take that with you. You want a compass. You need to learn how to use that now. Maps of the area. You want a water filter. This is going to be really important. You want some water bags to put the water that you filtered in. And there's all kinds of how-tos on the internet. You know, if you go to YouTube and you just type in, you know, homemade water filter, you'll get all kinds of videos on how to do a makeshift water filter. You might want some emergency blankets. They're small. We used to call them astronaut blankets, you know, the thin reflective Mylar. You want a small plastic mirror for signaling. Hand crank light, some kind of flashlight that works by shaking it, chemical light sticks, dehydrated meals, sea salt, and a lightweight cook set. And we already talked about the sleeping bag. And we have Dr. Lenny on line 3. So welcome to the show, Dr. Lenny.
Hey, Dr. Valerie. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I'm just waxing disaster.
I know. I've been listening. I spent the weekend with Matt Stein and Rick Miller in Reno. And the Saturday presentation by Matt Stein was When Technology Fails. He has a book out, and it pretty much is what you just covered in the last half hour. But it goes into detail on how to build things. And one of the things I would tell the listeners to do is to take a walk around their area and look out, scout out the locations where they might want to leave stuff ahead of time, like a campstone and propane, or some other things that if they had and didn't have to carry would be a good thing to support a stay outdoors.
Yeah.
Also, when you started, you said something about a video game. And you were talking about how the money has no value at what we have. Mm-hmm. I've been living as a hermit this last 6 months, inventing an online game to come offline to be community. And I've been working with Dr. Miller as a test of how to do things. I'm in the 44th day of a 64-day game that I set up for myself, and then afterwards I'll look at my notes and score the game on how it went. But the idea is that professional sports has scoring systems that measure performance in each different sport, and it very accurately reflects relative how people are doing at things. On the other hand, the public school system that we currently deal with requires the child get 7 out of 10 right and then makes it so that they really can't miss that 7 out of 10. So the whole range they use is from 70% to 100%, and that's only 30% of a normal range. So if we applied the same range to baseball players, a 300 hitter, 3 hits every 10 at-bats, is an utter failure. But he's not, and we know that. So getting realistic and figuring out how to measure things is really the point of the game. And the idea is going to be to produce media that teach people how to weigh in the different fields that those people are involved with. On another topic that you mentioned, when you started talking about castor oil and different things, Usnea, which is a lichen that grows all over the Pacific Northwest, is a awesome poultice material.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so instead of going and buying a lot of poultice material and trying to figure that out, just knowing how to identify Usnea, there's so much out there that you can literally pick your poultice when you need it. And being able to identify different plants and herbs and knowing what's edible, especially things that have edible roots but not terribly edible flowers, is such a good deal because that way people can get different nutrition.
Well, true, and they have those little, they have wildflower cards, survival cards that you can get from, usually metaphysical bookstores carry them, some big bookstores carry them, and usually survival
shops. My friends at Mystic Earth in Roseburg, Oregon carry that, and they also carry 2 solutions that I think everybody should be familiar with. Mm-hmm. One is Gold Ormus, and when you were talking about the mana being chlorella algae.
Yep.
I read some stuff from David Hudson, who found Ormus in the 1990s in Arizona in the desert and started doing digging and went into some Egyptian stuff. And I'm not so sure that the properties that they were having from this mana weren't the Ormus. Ormus is
there was
an
that
orbitally
too.
Rearranged monoatomic state of metals, and I'd love to do a show just on Ormus with you because I can't make any medical claims, but it's pretty amazing what the material
is. Well, Ormus is very, very amazing stuff, and as I mentioned before, I have some friends that make the white gold powder And they make it in little cakes and everything else too. And there's some mention in the Dead Sea Scrolls and stuff that of the white powder, so it could be that also that fell from the sky. But I also found some other things
There are multiple different forms of everything. Just
yep.
because we know it in one form doesn't mean we can't get it from other forms too.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, all this stuff is really important. And, you know, my concern is I run into people that say, well, you know, I don't have any money, so I guess I'm just going to die. And it's like, well, you don't have to be that way, because what if you survive? You know, if you die, sure, it's easy. You know, you're out of here. You don't have to worry about it. But if you survive, oh, my God, and you're not prepared.
Yeah.
Oh,
if you're out in nature, and you're calm about things and you're not freaking out and resonating badly, mm-hmm. the animals will accompany you and help you with things.
Sure.
And the animal intelligence on this earth is so far further along than anything any of these clowns that call themselves biological scientists think. Mm-hmm. At the conference we were at, there was a small pussycat that lived on the grounds and managed to not only meet every person, but keep us all out of the sensitive areas where they didn't want people to be. And I know how herding cats go, but this was a herding cat that was herding 75 people.
That doesn't
surprise me at all. I also
met
Matt Stein's dog, and Matt is a charm of a man. I enjoyed working with him a lot. But he was totally trained by his dog. And his dog, he'd be sitting at his computer, and the dog would walk up underneath his mouse hand and nuzzle it and ask for yummies and get them.
Yeah, well, of course. Yes, our animals do train us. My cat has me trained pretty well. So, yeah, it's interesting. Oh, that's the other thing. People that have pets need to prepare to take care of their pets.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So and the pet will help them immensely being out on the trip, but you have to understand the world from the pet point of view, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to be more in tune. And, I mean, I find, well, it was several years ago, I was telling people, wow, have you noticed that even the insects are more sentient now than they were? It was like it jumped all of a sudden. And I was like, wow, look at that. And it was like, okay. Now, I had a running dialogue with a black widow spider that was living in a hole in my door, in my front door, and she knew that.
Oh, yeah, I have a team of like a dozen spiders around my desk that keep the flies down.
Yeah, and I would tell her, look, go put your webs inside. I don't like black widow webs. They're sticky and awful. So I said, you know, there's tons of cockroaches in these walls because these apartments are all old. And they have a lot of people moving in and out. And I said, just go do that stuff in the walls and don't do this around my door or I will kill you. And, boy, I'd come walking up at night. She'd be out there just, you know, calling out to the males. And she'd see me and she'd boogie right into that hole. You know, I thought, okay, we have this little discussion going on. So she lived about 3 years. And she didn't bother me, I didn't bother her, you know, and that worked out okay.
You know, spiders like blue smoke very much.
Interesting. I thought so, too. Huh.
I just noticed the observed behavior after I started, and, you know, that's the best way to get in touch with reality, really, is every listener should take at least half an hour and observe something that's happening that is not something they usually watch.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There's an internet video of spiders on drugs. I think it's at Dr. Miller's website, and it's just hilarious. But spiders are very thoughtful creatures, and they can do an amazing amount of things. Oh, one more thing I wanted to bring up before I let you go back and say goodbye is that you talked about demonic influences.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that helps me the most when I'm dealing with shielding and demonic influences is focusing on my breath and getting myself under total control.
Yes.
If somebody's pushing my buttons and I'm starting to lose control, I can slip into the Buddha state. Or I can do the tapping like the EFT people tell you to do, mm-hmm. but the key thing is to notice you're getting there before you get there and don't have control of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
We're all responsible for our own thoughts.
Absolutely.
And I think that we're in for a super peaceful, good life after everything happens. And I'm wondering why people are trying to preserve this failed system when all we need to do is junk it and get on. Why do have to elect either Romney or Obama to take it all the way down to the total baseline before we can just fix things?
Absolutely.
The schools are awful. The mechanisms we have to deal with legal are awful. The whole economic system is gone, so let's start trading seeds, and let's take food out from being a commodity and just trade food, and nobody should have to pay a cent to be fed.
Yeah, I agree. And I like what you guys are doing because you're putting together these communities, little pods of people that are all supporting each other, and it's a far better way to go. And I'm part of a community doing that down here, too. And, you know, we got people around that have chickens or they have you know, summer and winter gardens and things like that. And, you know, everybody does some kind of healing thing that relieves pain and, you know, heals things up. And, you know, we're all just helping each other. And it's working out extremely well. And, you know, nobody, I mean, you ask politely, well, how much do I owe you? And everybody just goes, nothing, you know, we're just doing this because we can, and, you know, let's just all help each other, and that's the best way to be.
If we can track that helpfulness and use it in a score system to reward people for doing good stuff by giving their community more resources to use to do more good stuff, we could set it up sort of like the National Football League or Hockey League or something like that, test it with agriculture next year, and once we get the mechanisms down, use the same accounting methods in every different field you can imagine. Work an apprentice system where instead of sitting behind a desk and listening to somebody drone on, the kids get the tools in their hands and get to go out in the job. And even a four-year-old can walk around and pick up tools and hand somebody a wrench and a screwdriver.
Sure,
so
and they like that. They like to help.
At how things were done when they were families doing things together, 200 years ago.
Yeah, we need to get back to that. You know, we have to have another show on just that, but we've got to go right now because they're about to send out the hook. So so we're going to have to say good night.
Thanks for
calling in.
Right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, listeners, thank you very much for tuning in. I hope that this has helped you. We'll cover more of, you know, how to prepare for disasters in future shows. And I've asked Dr. Lenny and Dr. Miller and Matt Stein to give me some time next week to continue some of this and talk about what they do in the workshops. This is important stuff. You know, even if 2012 turns out to be a big dud, you need how to prepare. You need to know how to prepare for disasters so that you're safe. And, you know what they say, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So let's just make sure we're all safe, okay, and don't have to worry about this stuff. Now, once again, the show has been brought to you by starlights.com and alternativecancer.us. So please do check out those sites and see if there's something there that can help you with your life. And until next week, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty-night.